This is my favorite part of the evening, actually. The first poet, it looks like Dean Hasselton. That's it, Hasselton. Come on, Zane, come on. Everybody will get to read one poem tonight. And that is one, like, not two, one.
There's six poets.
You must stand, I think.
Stand? Okay, yeah, sure. I'm going to read you a poem about frogs, not just because I love frogs, and I do, but because about a month ago, you might have caught some interesting news for a change, and that is that the paleontologists had found fossils of frogs preserved in amber. And because of that preservation, there is a level of detail that is absolutely astonishing. And I thought, for something so fragile to last that long is something that's worth commemorating. So the title of this poem is The Eternal Amphibian. And there's an epigraph from Science News of July 7th. About 99 million years ago, tiny frogs hopped through a wet tropical forest, and an unlucky few ran afoul of some tree sap. She's 99 million years old, a passenger in an amber time machine from the Cretaceous period. In her time, great polysyllabic animals, pachycephalosaurid and ceratopsian dinosaurs, fed on forests full of conifers and giant firs. She, too, had plenty to eat. Swamps are full of food. She could have hunted the first bees, co-evolving with the first flowers. Instead, she flicked her tongue to catch an easy prey, a beetle stuck in a pool of resin, oozing from a wounded tree. An easy catch, and she was caught. Time did the rest, a few days to cover her with resin, a few million years to turn it into amber. Her name was Electrorana Limoy. She was a juvenile, just past her tadpolehood. No more she'd join the chorus of joyful peepers rapturously seeking sex in the steamy jungle. But there were compensations. She traveled well. As Pangaea split, she sailed on her continental yacht to Myanmar. Along the way, the world changed around her. An asteroid slaughtered the giant dinosaurs. Her children, frogs, survived as swampy waters cooled the blast. From her cocoon, she could have seen small furry mammals like shrews emerge from the apocalypse and thrive. Their children spread across the earth. A few more million years and we emerged. At first, we hunted for our food, then farmed. Then we built factories and filled them with the remnants of Electrorana's swamp. We dumped the sludge into her children's waters and sent the smoke into the air. We drained their swamp for parking lots and poisoned their food with DDT. As Earth warmed and pollution bloomed, the frogs declined. Whole species died. Soon their peeping won't disturb our air-conditioned sleep, and children won't raise tadpoles in mason jars. But rest assured, on some museum shelf, one will survive. Electrorana Limoy will endure. Thank you.
Thank you, Dean. This looks like Judy, or Judy, where you at? Oh, come on, Judy.
Great evening. Wonderful, wonderful to follow all these wonderful poets. So, in the spirit of my friend Charlie Bryce and his poem, The Poetry Book Parade. I thought I'm going to do a little self-promotion here of poetry, because I am going to be the Poetry Superhighway Poet of the Week, July 30th to August 5th. So check it out, Poetry Superhighway. So in that spirit, I'm going to read a little poem called Me and Jane Hirschfield. I envy Jane her conceits, those strands of truth her fingers scatter across abundant pages in gorgeous cadenced ribbons. Fate is one, the positive fact of it, the color of rose quartz, the coins she lets go as well, the numerous dogs she equates with joy, her abstracts like opinion and neverness, her essays that impart the whole world. Choosing many words for quietude, the silent portion of mountains and stones, Jane feels certain she makes a difference. She does, and I envy her. Thank you.
Thank you, Judy. Stephen Gontalelli. Oh, that's close enough. Come on.
Sit down. Okay. It's a thank you poem. I want to thank you for the picture you gave me, had it framed in bricklayer red, stands in my kitchen on a prop, like a landscape, like the landscape a bridge gives me, a golden trestle to the cupboard, a kite to my likeness, a bike stands on top of Swinburne Bridge, as a swan in a canal under a canopy in tufted gray erasures, floating over the reflection of a lane nearby. Can't help thinking of taking wing or serious pleasures. The hues and tones have already committed around us. A country is a landscape, a tone, a road. There are too many landscapes to tone down. Let us stand together in unbroken abounds.
Thank you, Stephen. Stefan. Sean, come on, my man.
A fire called war. My grandfather fought with the Marines in the South Pacific. He rarely talked about it, more than a few select safe for children stories. The only time he told the real stories was after a lot of beer and only with fellow World War II vets. He was long gone before I served. I never got to swap war stories with him. Never had a chance to tell him, it's okay to cry. It's okay to let the nightmares go. I met Sergeant Peach in Karbala, Iraq, while running security missions in 2004. A crusty old bomb tech then, a Marine Force recon vet during Vietnam. Every single night on every single mission, screaming, we woke to him, screaming, thrashing, calling for names we'd never meet. I've walked on paths similar to theirs, watched men breathe their last, felt the force of a roadside bomb, heard the air displaced by angry bullets. I've had the nightmares, woke up screaming, terrified, and sweating. I feel more comfortable with other vets, and I missed the war. I sat on that edge that many other vets have sat. I nearly became one of the 22 that we lose every day. But I had to give my demons voice to quell the fire that burns them. I write to take back control so that this fire called war will no longer burn me.
They help a lot of children, the Shriners do. Oh, matter of fact, Mark Twain was a Mason. Ryan Reagan, come on. All right. You got a stack, but only one tonight.
Yes, one tonight. And it'll be a short one.
It could be a long one.
Yeah, maybe next week. New one. On vinyl, first pressing. Side one, Lord, let me hurt no woman that gives her body to the lie that this means nothing. Let this not take air. Let this not be song, but to stay in the space of paint drying, where there's something more akin to the primal love of childhood that somehow begets the twin functions of adult love, need and want. Side two, move closer, we're just tracing a pattern into bone. Move closer, replace the lungs, the heart with their autonomic equations. Move closer, they took to this pattern out of necessity so that we may want song. Thanks.
Ryan Reagan. Your poem could have been longer than that. Good Irish name, Ryan. James Jackson, where you at?
All right, this poem is called Our Neighborhood Giant Eagle is Closing. Everything is on sale. Where once was bread, now empty shelves and strangers scanning aisles for the last shred of good. As it closes, you say, you are a little sad, but it was never your favorite grocery store. We have been fighting a lot lately, from our favorite TV shows, to what type of dog we might get, to which sugary cereals to pile into our cart with all these cheap products that don't fit together. Taco shells, toothpaste, store brand mac and cheese. Would you believe, a month ago, this place was stocked with everything we need? We try to talk about marriage, our deep water eyes zooming through the dark into a future where we guess what will become of this building, while seeking sustenance we know other shoppers already bought the last of. We need a sign to give us clearance to move on. Then the cashier, ringing each item slowly, as if savoring each would save his job, repeats, 30% off, 30% off, 30% off, and a little more every day. Thank you.